You're listening to the TV Obsessive Channel, presented by TVObsessive.com.
Hello and welcome back to the TV Obsessive Podcast, episode 43. My name is Ryan Kirksey. I'm a writer and contributor to TVObsessive.com. I'm joined today again by Cameron Crane, the executive editor. No podcast burnout here, Cameron. We still ready to go?
Yeah, I think we're ready to go.
Okay.
No space madness or anything like that.
No podcast madness, space madness.
We're going to be talking about the season finale. Hopefully it's just a season finale of Constellation on Apple TV Plus in the latter half of the pod here today, as per usual. You know, first we'll talk about what we've been watching a bit, what's been in the news, that sort of thing. So what do we have this week, Ryan? It's March 27th as we record today. Baseball is happening.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I was just ranting. We're going to do our news about how, you know, we're shut off from all these games. There's only one national TV game today. YouTube TV doesn't have MLB Network anymore. So I can rant about that for an hour, but that's probably not what we're here for. So
is it still opening day? Because didn't they already play games overseas?
There were two games played in Korea, so that those games counted. So I guess technically this is day three of games that matter.
Yeah, it's not opening day. All you people are wrong on those.
So this is the every other team gets to play today. MLB, and it's funny. Sometimes you go to social media sort of look for things, and there is a lot of commentary. MLB sort of shooting themselves in the foot by only having one game on television today. I mean, it's like you've got games from noon until midnight when you choose to have one game. So anyway, baseball continues to fall farther behind football, and that will be our life.
Oh, UFL probably starts soon too.
Yes. Okay. So here's an interesting story about UFL. UFL kicks off this weekend, and it kicks off this weekend in Houston at the university where I work.
Oh, wow.
The Houston Rough Riders playing. And The Rock is coming to campus to help be part of the kickoff of the game. So,
are you going to be
there? Exciting times.
Are you going to be there?
No, I'll be out of town. But The Rock's coming to Rice University to kick off the UFL season with the Houston Rough Riders, and I'm going to miss it. So,
Okay. Well, we'll stop talking about sports. I don't know people tune in for sports. Sports are on TV.
That's right.
What do we got in the news?
Could we start with Euphoria, actually?
Yeah.
This is an interesting story to me. So it came out this week that Euphoria is delayed indefinitely, right? So this is a wildly popular HBO show about, I guess when it started, they were teenagers, you know, involved in drugs and all sorts of nefarious things. And so now it's delayed indefinitely because, if people aren't aware, the show is Sydney Sweeney, Zendaya, Coleman Domingo, Storm Reid, who just won an Emmy from The Last of Us last year. You know, Coleman Domingo was nominated for Academy Award. So basically they come out and saying, well, you know, the quiet part they're not saying is because these are some of the most popular people in the world right now and so in demand, we're giving them a chance to pursue other things. So who knows if this actually will ever happen again.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. I mean, I felt like they were saying that out loud in terms of what I read. There are a few articles and so on. So depending on what you read, they were saying, well, you know, go ahead and pursue other projects. For a lot of these actors, at least to my understanding, Euphoria was the launch pad sort of for their career. Not for Zendaya, but she was already famous.
She was in a lot.
But Sydney Sweeney and so on. It's interesting. Have you watched Euphoria? I have watched Euphoria.
I've never seen Euphoria, actually.
I'm not going to recommend it to you. I have no idea if you'd like it at all. I have very mixed experiences with Euphoria. Like, when it was first coming out, I thought, okay, I'll check out this new HBO show. And I felt like a grumpy old man. I was like weirdly, I don't know, it made me really uncomfortable. And after some time passed, I went and gave it another shot and managed to get into the right kind of headspace where I could watch it and enjoy it without thinking like kids today all the time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and like, who knows? are the real youth like the youth on Euphoria? You know, this is, you know, it's overblown at least. I actually wrote about the second season. That was an interesting experience for me. Because as I went through it, I was never quite sure if I enjoyed it, if I liked it, or what to say about it. It's really weird too, in terms of the, because you would think, oh well, all sorts of people watch Euphoria, and indeed, if you would get on Twitter at the time, there'd be all sorts of people talking about it, but in a way that was very, want to say almost gossipy or something, you know, and you know, I'm trying to approach it with my kind of, you know, critical, thoughtful lens, like what's going on in the show, what is it saying? And I think by the time I got to the end of season two, I think I developed something of a line on it. You know, if you want to have any interest in going back and reading what I wrote on it. But then, like, I don't even know if I want to watch season three. So it's a really weird show for me in that way. But probably I will watch season three if it happens. I don't know if I want to write on season three. There is a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it just has not been, it's certainly been on the periphery of my radar, knowing who was in it. But now, just like sort of drilling into, man, this really is a strong cast. Maybe it's something that I give a shot before season three comes out. They say 2025 is still the goal. That's the goal for a lot of things right now. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, just a little more on this. In terms of my understanding and some other things around it. So, on the one hand, it seems like they're delaying season three, in order to let people pursue other projects. Something like that has been said. On the other hand, it kind of, I got the impression that Sam Levinson is reconsidering or rethinking or rewriting, oh, what season three is going to be. So maybe there are previous plans, they're adjusting it on the writing level. There's going to be something of a time jump. It appears that they're no longer going to be in high school. There are various reasons that this makes sense, but also having seen season two, it really does make me wonder what they're going to do, and I'm curious about it. We also know that a couple of people who were previous in the cast will not be in season three. I should, I don't have the name of the actor. One second, one second.
Do you have a sense of when season two aired? You remember what year it was?
Season two aired in 2022. Yeah, Barbie Ferreira, who played Kat on the show, has previously said that she's no longer going to be in it, not doing it anymore. In terms of what they were doing with their character, I would say, you know, okay. I always really liked her character, so I don't know about that, and I don't know if the adjusted plans will, they could potentially change that. The other big one, though, the biggest one is Angus Cloud, who, of course, tragically died last year. Just last year, right? Within, it wasn't terribly long ago, but that's the big one to me, to think that, okay, we're not going to have his character in the show anymore. It's a huge bummer, not just because, of course, of the real life tragedy of his death at such a young age, but in narrative terms, it was one of my favorite parts of the show.
No, I see.
So what are they going to do? And it really seems like season three might be meaningfully detached with a time jump into the future, and I don't even know how much that story will connect to what we've seen previously. Obviously, it probably will with regard to some of the main characters, but anyway, this is probably more than we needed to say about Euphoria. We'll see if and when we get it and what it's
If and
like.
when is the big question. There is a lot that is coming or that has come. You got a whole series of things that have recently started or coming soon. Any of those catch your attention the most?
Well, let's go to the Penguin, maybe. Did you watch the show? Are you excited for the Penguin? This is a spin-off of the Batman.
I am excited for this show. This movie got, I think, mostly positive reviews. Colin Farrell, I think, was generally perceived to have done a very good job with Penguin and sort of this new spin on that character. I've seen the trailer, which looks very interesting. So I will I mean, this sort of genre is right up my alley, like the movie. So I will be all in on this show.
And Colin Farrell says, quote, that the show is very dark and very violent,
Yeah.
which sounds good to me.
Yeah. It sounds like it's on the right network to make it very dark and very, very violent.
Yeah, so the Penguin is coming to Max in the fall.
Yes.
Not an
Max
HBO
exclusive.
show. It's not
Right.
on HBO. Don't.
Yeah.
Right,
And
it's
my understanding
Max.
still is that this, the Batman universe, this will not be connected to James Gunn's new rebooted DC universe, which also is owned by Warner Brothers, HBO, Max, but it's sort of its own thing. But yeah, I think that there was a character from that show that was going to get a spin-off. I think the Penguin was an interesting one to pursue, because sort of down in the depths of this gang world, and can make for an interesting premise. I am excited for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Penguin has always been an interesting character in
Yeah.
his various iterations, you know, whether we're talking about Danny DeVito or did you watch Gotham?
Yes, I did a long time ago.
I enjoyed it for a while, and then I don't think I finished it, and
I'm nor did I.
I'm not
Nor
sure if
did
it ended on its own terms or got canceled or what, but
I. Did he ever become Batman? Who knows?
at a certain point, I got kind of, well, that was my big problem with Gotham was when I started watching it, I thought, oh, this is cool. It's like Batman without Batman, you know, and I'm thinking of it as that's the premise. And they started taking it too close to Batman. I wanted them to never do that. You know, it was like Bruce Wayne's in it. He's a kid. All right. Nowhere close to being Batman, but they started taking it in the direction of like becoming Batman. I'm like, the kid's like, you know, 16 years old or something. I don't
And
know.
that's always been the appeal to me of shows like Gotham or like The Penguin, is that Gotham is basically this just perpetual underworld that exists that'd be really interesting to explore outside the realm of, oh, Batman's gonna go get the villains. And so the show like that, which kind of lost its way, The Penguin, those all do seem interesting to me.
Yeah, I think the way that they took Gotham ultimately, because also you had the villains and you knew how they lined up to the Batman villains, but they weren't quite actually the Batman villains. And I liked it when it was like that. And then they started taking it all in that direction. I don't know, there's some great camp in Gotham ultimately, so it is an enjoyable show.
Yeah.
Shifting gears to something that is presumably not going to be very dark and very violent, but is supposedly, quote, edgier and more irreverent than the original. Did you know that they're rebooting Good Times? Did you ever watch Good Times?
I have, of course, caught episodes of Good Times before. Did not know until this popped up that there was a animated reboot of Good Times coming very soon.
Very soon, like in next month, I think.
Yeah.
I was also unaware of this. Somehow it escaped my radar. Yvette Nicole Brown of Community fame is involved.
Yeah.
She was a source of the quote about it being edgier and more irreverent or what have you. Other voice cast of note, JB Smoove
Yep.
is involved.
I think we'll touch on him a little bit later if I'm looking at our rundown.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about our friend Leon. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe worth checking out. I remember Good Times mostly from when I was a kid. I can't say that I've watched Good Times anytime
Yeah.
recently.
You catch these episodes on, Nickelodeon or whatever when you're 9, 10, 11 years old, and you don't quite understand everything. It doesn't quite connect. I do wonder what it would be like to go and watch that now, 30 years later, whenever when I first started seeing clips of it.
Probably be pretty interesting. I revisited Married with Children a little bit over the summer. That's entirely different, but a similar kind of experience of going back to something that I maybe hadn't seen in 25 or 30 years. And yeah, I don't know. Kids today don't get to experience the joy of just watching what's on.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
like, I want to watch TV. What's on TV? It's like, okay, I've got like three choices. You know, my choices are like the Donahue talk show or
Yeah, exactly.
Mr. Rogers, or oh, okay, I watched Three's Company, you know,
Yeah, yeah. Just
something like
that
that.
it was for that. It was either shows like that or soap operas for, our house
Right,
growing up.
the soap
So
operas, the soap operas,
when
which,
I got control of the remote, it went off of talk shows and soap operas, and that was about all that was left.
and that's the thing. If it was, you know, the afternoon or whatever, and you wanted to watch something that wasn't a talk show or a soap opera, or PBS programming. There's very limited options, but maybe you'd get some of these
Exactly.
sitcoms in syndication
Exactly.
on your UHF dial. Anyway, what else we got here? X-Men. You've been watching X-Men?
Yes, so I have not seen the third episode, which has just come out. Watched the first two. I just found this fascinating because I guess I should have assumed this, but they are making what I would describe as very little attempt to modernize the animation. I mean, so there was a style of animation in the 90s. We're going to use that same style today, and we're going to pick up where that show left off, just maybe 3 or 4 weeks later. And just go with it. And it's like, I mean, it's just feeding nostalgia into my veins, and I'll take it, right? It's been good so far through the first two.
Awesome. Yeah, and apparently it's doing well. I think
Yes.
well, the number we have is 4 million viewers
Yeah.
for the
So
premiere. I
4
think
million
that's a good
viewers for
amount
the
this
first
year.
episode in the first 5 days. So that, I mean, that's it is the highest viewership for an animated show since the first episode of What If, now 3 years ago or so. So it is doing well. The reviews are doing well, and so I don't know how long they think this is going to go on, but this is now set up to multiple seasons, I would imagine.
Yeah, no update on what's going on with Bo DeMeo. I haven't seen anything.
Nor
I've
have
looked a
I.
little bit. I haven't seen anything. We hit on that
Nor have I.
before, how it appeared that he was fired, a week before it came out. And at least I haven't seen any updates on that whatsoever,
I have
what
seen nothing.
happened, what's going
Not
on. And
a word.
I did try to look last week, so whatever that's worth. Way farther down the line, this caught my eye because of the cast. This show, The Sensitive Kind, they're working on a pilot for FX from Sterling Harjos. Hope I'm saying that right. Apologize. If not, did Reservation Dogs and some other things. But the cast on this, you got Keith David, you got Jean Triplehorn, you got Kyle MacLachlan. You know, Kyle MacLachlan's in something that catches my eye.
So this is the again our weekly introduce me to something I'd not heard of before. I do love that the only description that we have for this as we read this Deadline article is it's about a guy who knows too much. That's the plot of the show.
Yeah, and I think at one point they might refer to it as a Tulsa noir. I'm like,
Yeah,
are
Tulsa
we just making
Noir.
up genres?
Yeah.
I get it, but at the same time, I've never heard that
Kind of like
before.
Fargo season four was Kansas City Mafia, that genre. This is Tulsa Noir. That's what we're going for.
Right, but I'm in. I think it looks cool. I'll check it out when it comes out. No release date on that or anything at
Yeah,
this
but
point,
you're
but it
right,
is.
man. Tremendous cast. Tremendous cast. This
Oh
show's
yeah, there are
gone.
more people than I mentioned too that were recognizable. I have to pull it up again here. Maybe I'll mention a couple more. You've got, in addition to Keith David and Jean Triplehorn and Kyle MacLachlan, you've got Tracy Letts, who of course we know from Winning Time, Jack
Yes,
McKinney,
yes.
Macon Blair. They point to Oppenheimer. You might know him from various places. I know he was an episode of Room 104. Tim Blake Nelson. Just.
Macon Blair was a very one episode, very creepy character in The Last of Us. Very creepy character.
I can
So
see
yeah,
that.
he sort of there's some shows you watch and you notice performance and you think, oh my gosh. I want to see what else this guy can do. And that was making Blair for that show for me.
Yeah, so this is a great cast, and Siena East. Oh, and we've like buried the lead that Ethan Hawke is involved in all of that.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, just for various reasons, primarily from the cast. I think, oh, this seems like something to keep an eye out for and potentially
Absolutely.
watch because presumably it'd be well made and well acted, if nothing else. And even if I took a jab at it, Tulsa Noir sounds cool.
Yeah, great.
I'm a sucker for things described as noir.
Noir. Yeah. We'll see what the Tulsa version of it actually means. But real quickly, just because I saw the first two seasons of this, haven't caught the last two, but a show that has a very devoted, very rabid fan base called You on Netflix, Penn Badgley, about a guy who how shall I say without spoiling anything, obsesses over women,
Yes.
and it's very interesting ways. Final season begun filming, season five coming. This is one of those shows my wife and I watched together, season one and two, and I actually thought that those first two seasons were very good, and then we saw season three is like, not for us. Haven't seen it since, but I don't know. It's apparently this show has a lot more fans than I thought, and they are ready for this fifth season to come. This has been one of those sort of groundswell Netflix hits, the sort of
Oh, yeah.
original programming that has done very well for them.
Yeah, it was kind of a big deal. It became like immensely popular. I haven't watched it. My understanding is that it's a really good binge watch.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
We do have a couple things on the site that Isabel Greenbrook on season four. Got a little bit of a negative review from Isabel. Maybe almost in moral terms, she wasn't entirely happy with some of the stuff they did. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't talked to her about season five. If she's gonna watch it, she'll write on it again. Decent chance, I suppose. But cool, yeah, that's filming. And yeah, I guess that leaves us with the three body problem article that we were going to discuss. You've been writing on three body problem for the site. Got articles up.
Yeah, I have four
Maybe
pieces
three,
up right
four
now. Yeah,
articles.
four up right now. Might throw a fifth up for those that watch the show. Episode seven has what's become known as the Einstein joke, and a very interesting conversation within that penultimate episode. Might write something about that in the coming days. So yes, that's up now. If you want to take a look, highly recommend the show. Highly recommend the books. But yeah, this has gotten some cultural and political people riled up over one particular scene.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. So I haven't seen the show. I've read Ryan's articles and editing and stuff like that. And it was interesting to me too, because it's something we talked about, because I was a little confused based on my understanding of the Cultural Revolution in China and things like that. And also maybe it's because the Chinese government's effectively been suppressing stuff about some of the stuff that was going on. Because really it's relatively accurate. There's a scene with what they call a struggle session and so on. Sort of deciding here, this isn't a spoiler. It's out there. People are talking about it in various ways. So apologies if anyone finds this to be a spoiler.
It's also
You
a
know,
real thing that happened 60 years ago. So, I mean, there is that.
right. And we don't need to go into detail of how it fits into the show, right? You know, we can avoid that spoiler. But you know, the long and short of it is in the persecution of scientists, basically.
Anything to do with science, anything to do with a lot of with religion as well.
Right, which that was the science part was the odd fit in terms of, so I thought I knew some things about Mao and, but I think it's the, I don't know, the Western science part of the science, the Western, the emphasis on Western, I don't know. Anyway, we don't need to get caught up on that. But I thought it was interesting. I wasn't aware of this. So the Chinese government, as it were, is not terribly happy with this being in the Netflix show. And it isn't this scene, which is in the book, as I understand it, right? This scene is not in that in the Chinese version of the show that they
So
put out.
I actually have been reading about this, and this is tremendously interesting to me. So this book originally came out in Chinese in 2006. And as we've discussed before, this book is densely populated with very scientific techno jargon explanations of different theories and models and scientific experiments and explanations. What I have seen and verify this a couple places. This struggle session scene that opens the English language book and also opens the show, which is incredibly powerful, and has become controversial, was in the original Chinese book, but they buried it inside a chapter that was like full of scientific jargon. And so it's like, hopefully they miss it and they'll let us push it through and publish it. And apparently that happened. But when the English translation came out, Cixin Liu, who is the author, put it back in the front because he said that's where it should have been in the first place.
Yeah, really
So,
interesting.
very interesting.
And then you've got Yeah, I don't know what you think about this. We don't have to go too far into this, but we've got figures on the right wing of American politics saying, "Oh, this is like cancel culture." What do you think of that?
I find it interesting that this is what they have adopted as a cultural moment to say, here's the dangers of getting too woke. If you go down this path, the logical conclusion of that is the left is going to start publicly persecuting and beating you. So it's I don't want to go so far as to say hypocritical or just completely wrong-footed, but it's a stretch in my mind. It's a
Yeah,
stretch.
strikes me as a little bit of a silly claim. No one is even lying. I don't know. Yeah, I
I mean,
don't know.
if nothing else, if the show does interesting, if you're just looking for a sort of an emotional, powerful moment that actually is embedded in history, the first 15 minutes of Free Body Problem are very, very well done and sort of reflect what actually did happen back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah. And that's interesting about this too, that my understanding is looking into it a bit, that historically it's accurate. The Cultural Revolution, and this is what's making China communist ultimately, right? But so the currently existing what I keep wanting to say the CCP. Is that what it is? The CCP? Anyway, the Chinese government right now, they're like, no. That didn't happen. This is like a Tiananmen Square thing. So it didn't happen,
Didn't happen.
which is interesting. But they let him kind of sneak it into the book. But anyway, now it wasn't in the show, so that in China, but it's
Right.
in the
Not
American show.
in the Chinese show. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I don't know. Interesting thing. So, what else have we been watching lately?
Yeah, besides that, which is that's taken up a lot of my last week. We have a new, actually last night had a new episode, haven't seen it yet, but Top Chef is back. Top Chef is back with a new host.
Cool.
Padma Lakshmi is gone after 20 seasons of her, it's her own choosing, going on to pursue other things. So they got Kristen Kish, who was the winner from season 10, as host now, and they're in Wisconsin this season. I guess there'll be a lot of brats and
Cheese,
cheese and things
lots of
like that.
cheese.
Yep. So, but no, I'm just thrilled. Love Top Chef. Love the quality of what they do. And yeah, I don't know much about Milwaukee, Wisconsin cuisine, so I guess we'll learn some over the next 12 weeks.
Cool. I met a guy who was on Top Chef once. Did I tell you
Oh
this
yeah.
before? Yeah, this was, man, maybe 15 years ago by now. I think his name was Spike.
Oh. Spike. I think I remember a Spike. That's interesting.
Just
Yeah,
ran
it's
into
those
him in a
early
bar in
seasons
New York
all,
City
yeah.
and just
Yeah.
hanging out. I'm like, hey, you're on Top Chef. The season he was in was still airing. They were like
Oh,
talk, chatting him up and stuff. He's like, I can't tell you what happens.
Yeah.
But it was kind of
No, very
interesting
good.
little
First episode,
celebrity
very
sighting.
good. Re always recommend recommend Top Chef.
Speaking of things that have been on for a couple of decades, so I caught up on the recent season of Curb. I finally did it. I binged eight episodes of
Good.
Curb in the past week.
So
And
you've seen Colostomy Bag and everything else.
yeah, I've seen the episode that aired on Sunday night. I'm at this point caught up with the currently airing season. I was looking at episode descriptions because I mentioned to you before how I knew that I was at least a couple few seasons behind. I didn't know how much. So I was looking at episode descriptions to figure that out. And I think the last one I watched was season seven.
Oh
But
boy.
if you look at the years, it was like 2011. And I was like, oh, it hasn't been that long. Yeah. It's 13
Yeah, there's
years.
been some 3 or 4 year gaps in between some of these seasons.
Yeah, I mean it's been 25 years since
Yeah,
this thing
exactly.
started. It's just really kind
Exactly.
of a
It's very weird having now seen them all, and I didn't certainly did them in real time, but have caught up. It's very weird to think there are only two episodes left, so they claim. But yeah, just two more.
right. But see, I think this is true. And as we've discussed before, I did feel the motivation to be with everyone as Curb ends. So I have these seasons I haven't seen. As I'm getting myself back into the mode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, maybe I'll start watching all of those too, retroactively and fill in the gap. Maybe, but two episodes left. And something of a kicking off point in terms of motivating me to actually finally start doing this was both Larry David and then Jeff Garlin appeared for interviews on the Rich Eisen show. You ever watch Rich Eisen?
Oh yeah, I do from time to time. Mostly that's one of the things I catch on YouTube or social media or something and see some of these interviews.
I watch things on YouTube. I don't watch the Roku channel, whatever the Roku channel is. I don't even know what it is, really. But I'll watch things on YouTube about sports and stuff like that. But he does interviews, and he'll have interviews with celebrity guests. And so I also watch this, like a 40-minute long interview with Larry David, and then the one with Jeff Garlin. I think is also like half an hour. But from watching those interviews, maybe particularly the one with Jeff Garlin, it became clear that when we get to the end of these next two episodes, we will understand why this is the end of the series.
So I have a theory. I don't know if it's I mean, to share what the end is going to be. You know, there's a lot of people that haven't seen this season yet, but I may send you a note on what my theory is, and we'll see see if I'm right, because I have a based on what happened in the first episode, I think I know where this ends up.
Yeah,
So we'll see.
I have a guess myself, but I tend to think my guess is probably wrong. We won't go into it. No spoilers, no spoilers. I do think it's striking though, because I just revealed that I actually haven't watched Curb Your Enthusiasm in like 15 years. So, it's the same. And Larry David, I mean, it's interesting how Larry David is, of course, older. But he doesn't really seem that much older, you know. He manages to be one of these guys who's like always been an old man of this style, and it's just kind of still the same. But of course, he looks a little bit older, and so on, right? But.
No, I'm glad, and it's interesting that I was talking about wanting to be caught up as this ends. Obviously, this is, you know, 20 plus year institution. It's not like this show is unraveling some mystery or there's some twist or there's something we have to
Right.
figure out. You know, it's just a cultural commentary, but it is one of those things that's been with us for so long. It does feel like, yeah, I kind of want to be with it as it ends and be there with everyone else.
That was my feeling. Yeah, I don't feel terribly bad about the gap that I have. I mean, certainly there are some things as I was watching this season where there was the reference to Mocha Joe or whatever with his lawyer, and I was like, I don't really know what you're talking about. I'm missing something here. I recognize, you know, or things like when did Vince Vaughn start being on the show? But like it's not
That's not Vince Vaughn.
or Tracy Ullman or whatever, right? But like they're playing characters, which is also like, okay. I mean, who's playing themselves and who's playing a character and all that? But you know, you just like, okay, accept it and move forward, right? But it's more a matter of the feeling I have that when Curb ends here in a couple of weeks, it will at least in some way resemble the kind of cultural experience of when Seinfeld ended, when Friends ended, you know, which are these kind of big cultural moments that we're not going to have that many of anymore because nothing manages to get that big. But here you have the show has been going for 25 years in the consciousness. I think it'll feel like that, and people will be talking about it. So.
I think you're right. It'll have a long runway when it ends of people. Yeah, that pay a lot of attention to it over 25 years. So yeah, I mean, they're sweet, but it's been a good last season.
Looking for, I'm sure the way it's going to end, Larry David's going to be happy. His life's going to be good. He's not going to have any problems anymore. Yeah.
Oh
All right. Yes, obviously not. But okay, let's get to Constellation. Yeah,
yeah.
it's a season finale, and we'll talk a bit more about our hopes for further seasons as we get going here. But spoilers on the table then for everything in season one of Constellation. And as per usual, we'll pop in about 10 seconds of music. And on the other side, spoilers are on the table, so be aware of that. And see you in about 10 seconds.
Okay, we are back to discuss the season finale of Constellation, Episode 8. These fragments I have shored against my ruin. Cameron, you're going to have to explain to us a little bit what that means exactly. This episode is written by Peter Harness and directed by Joseph Seder. This duo did each of the last three episodes. And in this finale, Joe is taken to a facility that's run by IRENA that treats astronauts. And Joe eventually learns that it's a condition known as astronaut burnout, something that's not public, but that many people in space have faced. When Ilya, her astronaut colleague, visits Joe, he gives her keys, tries to get her to escape, but instead she spends time searching the facility and finds another patient. IRENA eventually tells her that this was the first ever person to go into space. Meanwhile, we have some time spent with both Alices in both worlds as they come to grips with what they have. One of them has lost their mother to another world. One of them has their mother, but it's not their real mother. And they try to continue to talk through and work through those situations. They talk with their respective fathers, their respective Magnuses about it, try to gain some clarity and eventually get peace about the situation. Joe and Magnus do discuss the fact that Joe is pregnant. She wants to have the baby, but it's not sure what's going to happen if she continues to take the pills that IRENA says will make her better. On the Bud Henry front, we saw that they switched places last episode. Bud tells IRENA he has switched and he's going to start to take over Henry's life. Henry, on the other side, is arrested for the murder of Ben Rogers and attempted murder of Paul. Paul wakes up disoriented and confused, not sure what's going on in the hospital. And the last scene, we go back inside the ISS where the corpse of the Joe who died suddenly wakes up as some kind of zombie creature looking a lot like the Valia that IRENA represented. And one more moment of grabbing the product placement iPad before the season ends. So there we
Apple.
go. There's the finale from Constellation. Should we start with the title meaning? Should we start with sort of big picture? Where should we go?
We can start with the title if you like. I don't know if everyone looked this up. It's basically a line from T.S. Eliot's poem "The Wasteland," written in the aftermath of World War I. These fragments I have shored against my ruin. But I believe it's actually ruins in the poem. Minimal difference. Feel my recap for this week, the article I wrote. I gave the stanza, so it's a closing stanza. There's Latin in there. It's a good poem. If people appreciate poetry, it's also a modernist poem, and he plays with things. And in that last stanza in particular, you have untranslated passages that are coming from bits of European culture, as it were. One of them that stuck out to me to think about with reference to Consolation is the one line is from Dante Purgatorio, which Purgatory in particular, so a lot of things about this felt thematically resonant to me. And I think that while T.S. Eliot, I mean, it's a similar kind of thing because he's in the aftermath of World War I, and this feeling of the world having ended, like a worry about that, at least a worry about the end of civilization itself, perhaps,
The war coming to end all wars.
and what does he have up against that is just these fragments, right? So perhaps he's precisely referring to the lines he quotes in the stanza. That's one read of it. But it's quite a long poem, so there are other things that you could appeal to. And I think, in terms of what's going on in this episode, what fits is that there is a sense in which Jo is equally, she's lost her world. She's been struggling with that. She's been in this kind of liminal space. Also, psychologically, the tension between her and Alice and all of that. And how that is at least what this finale does resolve, right?
Do we get any sense of in this episode or reference to anything beyond just two primary worlds, the Bud Henry world, the non-Joe world, the Paul non-Paul world? So I didn't sense many other realities or other universes or worlds in this episode. I think we're sort of confined to these very two limited spaces that we are briefly switching back and forth between.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem so. And we've talked about this a lot over the course of the season. How many worlds, how many realities are we dealing with? And of course, I kept pushing that there were more than two. But at the end of the day, it really kind of does feel like there are two. There are things that complicate that, the cabins and all of that. So there's a question of how we read that. And certainly, I think if we do get further seasons, the door is wide open for more realities to enter the story in a meaningful way. But it does really seem like there are two that are at play.
And let me ask you one other question. This gets into more of what's happened through this episode, which is Joe hears from Irina that there's this condition known as astronaut burnout. It's been suffered by many people who've been up to space, some of which are there in the facility. Irina is certainly one of them. The pills can help. Does she ever fully explain? I mean, I guess Joe has realized that she has switched into some other reality, but that's not necessarily what Irina is explaining to her is happening. She's saying there's some condition, some psychosis or some mental condition that happens to astronauts. She's not really confirming or denying that, no, you're actually in the wrong universe.
Well, yeah, but see, I think Irina is an interesting character here because does she know that? Does she accept that view that she herself also came from a different reality, as it were? Perhaps not, I think, right? I mean, her character is interesting in this episode because I think towards the beginning, she definitely seems like she's being deceitful or whatever. To the extent that we kind of know the truth and are with Joe and know that what Joe is saying is true, I think, you could strain an interpretation in the other direction. But of course, from the point of view of your everyday person, say, oh no, yes, you have a mental illness, right? This is like a psychosis brought on by high altitudes, astronaut burnout. And it's quite interesting to me that if you look into this at all, it's not, this isn't totally fake what they're appealing to here, right? In terms of mental health issues for astronauts and so on. So does Irina perhaps actually believe that it is a mental illness that she herself has had some experience with, and so on and so forth? But she's moved in the direction. I don't know, maybe or maybe not, right? I just like, what does Irina know?
I got the impression, two things, that she does not realize or want to accept, or maybe the pills have suppressed that in her. Number one is she seems sort of shocked by the idea, just shocked by the idea that Bud is now here instead of Henry. I guess that's just sort of how that happened. That could surprise her, but that she just didn't know that that was possible. And also, number two, if you're going to be a whistleblower and email every astronaut of something about called astronaut burnout, why would you not say, oh, you're going to risk dying and also having your body moved into another universe if you go up into space? It's sort of like, I'm going to give the little nugget, but not the entire, the entire thing. That's not what she chooses to send them.
Well, that's why I think that maybe she actually doesn't know or hasn't accepted as much as Joe has, right? So when she meets, so she gets freaked out when Joe starts saying the lines from the ghost tape of Irina dying in the whatever, in the other reality, I guess. She kind of freaks out and contacts Henry, says it's urgent, and they meet for dinner, right? And but now it's not Henry, it's Bud. But even in that scene, what does she say? She's like, Henry, you gotta start taking your pills. What are you doing? Right. So there's a background here is that they have this relationship, and part of their bond is in this sense that we've both suffered from this mental health issue in a similar way. Henry has always been kind of pursuing the idea that there's something more metaphysical at play, and the Cal device feeds into that. But if you go back or think back, Irina's always been throughout the series kind of dismissive of that.
And the more I think about it, the more I think that that's exactly right. She didn't have a, first of all, like Henry, a counterpart who is alive and trying to get, get where his other consciousness is. She doesn't have an Alice that sort of serves as a constant or something that can sort of tether you to either place or that you can anchor yourself to say, I don't belong here because of this specific thing. She doesn't really have that. She just thinks, well, Joe is suffering from the same thing. Henry is suffering from the same thing. She's clearly died in her other reality, but nothing to necessarily prove to her that she should be somewhere else.
Yeah. And at least that's how I'm reading it
Yeah.
ultimately. So
Yeah.
if we think about her letter, it is that Irina has finally become motivated to take seriously the possibility that something else is going on besides psychosis, right? Besides it just being a psychological issue.
Yeah.
And so she's putting out this letter to astronauts around the world, I guess, saying, let me know what you've been dealing with, you
Yeah.
know? And I'm gonna start gathering information. I think that's a big thing. If we get a season two, that's a big thread that they'll pick up, right? Where Irina is actually becoming an entry point into the broader investigation beyond just season
That's a
two.
great point that if this does go beyond, we may get a sense of how much wider this goes or how much farther this goes. And Irina having her eyes open to it's even bigger and a bigger thing than you're realizing here.
Yeah. So that's how I'm reading it. I
Yeah.
could be wrong. I
Yeah.
mean, there's a couple of things here that are ambiguous, or how do you read them exactly? Like you mentioned Ilya and his visit, and he says he's going to be taking over for Irina, and everything he says in their conversation is along the lines of, you're mentally ill, you need to accept help, you need to move forward, you need to get over this. But then he slips her the keys.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So
What?
does he slip her the keys so that she can escape? This is what you said, I think, in your little summary. Does he
Yeah.
slip her the keys knowing that her curiosity is going to be such that she won't be able to help but see who's upstairs?
Yeah. And just 2 episodes ago, he was trying to, he was Joe's mole trying to get health records and data out of the astronaut library. And now it almost seems like I don't think he's been brainwashed, but he's sort of drinking the Kool-Aid that Irina is selling over there.
Maybe, or how long has he been involved? We saw
Yeah.
when he was at the library, Irina approached him. But I don't know. We don't know a lot about Ilya's backstory and how he factors in, really. Here's a little bit I missed this in my recap article. I totally forgotten about this. Someone on Reddit pointed out to me that in back in episode 3, when they're visiting Paul's grave or tree or whatever, Ilya says that he heard that the first man in space actually wasn't Yuri Gagarin, but was actually Vladimir Ilyushin, and so on and so forth. And then they dismiss that as a conspiracy theory.
Yep.
So here's another thing. Who's the guy there?
Who is the guy in the facility? And based on your comment, it would make sense that that's Vladimir, whoever, the conspiracy theorists say was the first one up there. And he's been hidden now if something happened to him.
Right, because Ilya says it was actually Vladimir Ilyushin, but he crashed in China, I think he says, and then they put it they locked they brought him back to Russia and locked him up.
Yeah,
Right, that's part of the thing. And the thing is, that's a real person, and that's a real conspiracy theory.
yeah.
Okay, so who is it now? To push back on this a little bit, because this person on Reddit was saying, "I missed this. I was wrong," or whatever. Because I talk about Yuri Gagarin. In the episode credits, he's credited as Yura, no last name. The character is
So
credited.
not exactly Yuri and no name to compare it to, no surname to compare it to.
Yeah.
Close, but not exact, not quite.
Minus, I guess Yura, I think, is a diminutive, like a nickname for Yuri, so it seems to land there. But yeah, I don't know. That's another question. Regardless, Joe sees two, it would seem. He's saying mama. I don't know. That we see him
Yeah.
again later, he's playing chess with himself. So I don't know, but it's interesting how throughout Constellation has brought in real life reference points, but they don't always match up, or real life conspiracy theories that the show's not fully embracing but not fully rejecting either. It really feeds into this sense of kind of reality itself feeling ambiguous, and I quite enjoy
Exactly.
it.
Yeah, that was certainly one of the most appealing things about it to me, that it was, I mean, certainly those theories, ideas, conspiracies were approachable, but never, you still left us with, we always talked about what are going to be the questions that are answered, still left us with plenty of good questions to go forward.
Right. So what we do, what do we resolve? We do resolve the relationship between Joe and Alice.
Yes.
And I think also Joe and Magnus
I think
in the
in many ways,
one world.
yes. Yeah.
So with regard to Joe, our Joe, this is my line on these fragments I have shored against my ruin, that the fragments are that there's just enough there that she can say, okay, I'm going to choose to love this Alice who's not my Alice. I'm going to choose to love this Magnus who's
Yeah.
not my Magnus. I'm going to do my best to make this life work. I need an Alice, right? And that scene where Alice says, I need a mom. I need a mom. I need an Alice. They know that they're mismatched, but they're going to
Yeah.
do their best to make it any work anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that was certainly a really, I think, maybe needed acceptance on both sides. We know what's going on, we know who each other are, but there's going to be a hole in both of our lives no matter what. Why don't we try in some way to fill it for each other? We know the situation, but let's try it.
Yeah, and the Alice in the other reality accepts that she lost her mother, and even if her mother is actually alive in this other reality, there's nothing she can do about it, whatever, however you want to put this exactly. She decides to accept that, not begrudge the other Alice.
Yeah.
She and Magnus are apparently moving out of their house, and who knows, what comes next for them, but they're gonna live in acceptance of having lost Joe. Of course, we know things are more complicated, and is that even going to hold? We move forward through further seasons. What do we think about the final scene?
What do we think about the final scene? Oh boy. So
Yeah.
I guess I always thought before this final episode that the Valya, that Irina's other form, I guess for lack of a better term, was more of a supernatural or ethereal thing and not this physical thing that would appear. And so I'm wondering, is the Valya, will Joe become some sort of new version of that that can sort of appear wherever it wants to or needs to? It's sort of also raises this question, okay, if we go down the rabbit hole of how broad has this become within the NASA or Russian space program, are there many of these things out there? But my question is more centered on, okay, what does that then mean for Joe as a version of the Valya? What can it do? What can it not do? Where can it go? Where will we see it next?
Yeah, I definitely made that connection myself. And it's nice to have something more to work with in terms of thinking about the Valya, which is, it's convenient they gave us a way to quickly refer to the dead Irina in the cosmonaut suit. But so it's nice as a reference point on that. One thing I noticed, and pretty sure I'm right about this, that in the last scene, you see the dead Joe. She reaches out and she grabs the iPad, as you mentioned. Think different now. But that iPad, almost positive, I put it in my article. That iPad is from the other world than the dead body.
And what is causing you to think that?
Because it's the iPad that the Joe who lives throughout back into the space station at large that she's recorded the message on. And so
I see. And there, the Joe who died did not have one or record a message. I guess I'm ambiguous on whether that actually happened or not. I
yeah,
can't remember.
perhaps I need to go back and watch the beginning of episode. What episode am I thinking of? It would be the Paul is Dead episode, probably the one where Joe dies in space.
We
And
see
watch
that
that
side of
very
things now.
carefully to make sure that I'm right about this. But I am
Yeah.
almost completely sure that it's mismatched. And but see, that's actually fruitful in terms of thinking about what's going on to me,
Yeah.
in that the Valya too seems like between worlds, can seep in, can talk to Alice, appear in the hospital, do that kind of stuff. So space zombies.
Yeah.
I said space zombies,
Yeah, why
but
not? We've had Jason in space. We've had all kinds of things in space. Why not?
so, but then the space zombie, this is the kind of intriguing twist, as between two realities in a certain way, or unmoored from one particular reality, perhaps, or something like this.
Yeah.
You said something like, well, how many might there be? I don't know. I guess that's an open question. But my read on it would be that it would not only perhaps require dying in space, but being left in space for a certain period of time. Because my wildest theory is what I was about to get into next. I think this is the wildest theory.
What is it?
Henry's a space zombie.
Oh, and so how is he then, I guess, for lack of a better term, makeuping himself or covering himself up the time
Or
of
maybe
zombiness?
it's Bud who's a space zombie.
Bud
The wild theory would be that
is.
one of them is, because throughout the season we've talked about this, right? Something's different here. You've
Yeah.
got a living Joe and a dead Joe, a living Paul and a dead Paul,
Yes,
a living
yes.
Irina and a dead Irina. You got Bud and Henry, right?
Yes.
So maybe one of them actually did die on Apollo 18, but no gross physical injuries like what occurred to Joe. But then is because become reanimated and then re-entered the Earth, and that this is the explanation of what's been going on with Bud and Henry as two apparently living human beings, but
Yeah.
really one of them should be dead. And I said Henry because then maybe that would be explanation of Bud feeling that Henry took his life over, where Henry should have been in the other world and dead, that Henry managed to take over the life of the Bud Caldera, who should be alive, and that is him, and now he's trying to take it back.
And Joe could potentially do that because she is still floating inside there in the ISS, whereas Irina apparently died in space, helmet busted, couldn't, I don't know, because they couldn't recover from that. I mean, that's kind of obvious, but just in a situation where they could,
That's
Joe can
interesting.
reanimate because she can become a person again where she is. Irina could not if she died in space with a busted helmet, right?
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. You just got me thinking about, okay, so could our Joe, who's in space, missing an eyeball or whatever, get a little reconstructive surgery, go back to
Right.
Earth and,
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's got to be better plastic surgery than when what happened to Bud, that's decades ago.
So I don't know. That might all be completely wrong. That's why I said this
Right.
is like my most wild speculation, but it is a
Right.
question I continue to think about, how Bud and Henry seem different from the others, insofar as we've got three other people where there's a version who died in space, and then we don't seem to have that
Yeah.
with Bud and Henry. So
It's kind of the simple, convenient answer to say, oh, well, both versions died, and so they just woke up on the other side. But that's not what happened in any other situation that we know about.
yeah, so I don't know, but just it's something to think about in terms of
Yeah.
how does that factor in overall.
Yeah.
I don't know how much more we want to say about Bud and Henry. I have some thoughts potentially about Henry being charged with Bud's crimes and how he approaches that and being kind of foolish. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just, sort of the why of it all. You're going to track down Ian Rogers in the place where you've been transferred over just because you despise him and you want him to know that you're stalking him, you're looking for him, you're watching him, but there's no real reason for this guy to be after Rogers in that world. I mean, that was my read on it, but I could be missing a lot of context there.
Or was it really, should we read that at face value, that Bud saying, oh, you're alive, you're leading Jack the Ripper tours, good for you, here are some flowers,
Yeah.
have a good life, I killed you in the other universe, have a good one.
It's like great that you're saying that, but this guy didn't know that. This guy didn't have any concept of what's going on. So I don't know.
Yeah, that scene just felt a little bit shoehorned in. I mean, it was a fine scene. On the other side, in the other reality, Henry's being charged with that murder. He's being
Yeah.
charged with the attempted murder of Paul. He wants to take a polygraph, which I always get a little bit bothered by the polygraph trope. Because, they're generally not admissible in court and so
No,
on.
they're
But it's like
not.
a TV trope, like, I'm gonna take a polygraph, that'll prove
Yeah,
something.
the DNA one was more compelling. We should have opposite DNA, but does he know that because he's been experimenting on people that happen to? I mean, how would you hypothesize that that's the case?
Yeah, I don't know. That is kind of interesting because the door remains open to him being right and the cops
Yeah.
just being like, we're not going to take that seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And
Yeah.
that's the thing. Like, at a tactical level, none of this is going to work, man. What you're going to have to do ultimately is,
Yeah.
plead insanity or what have you. And Henry's in trouble. He's trapped in this reality. He's going to end up
Yeah. And now the victim
mental
is woke.
hospital at best.
Yeah, the victim is woken up, so there's not much he can do at this point.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah, I'm way more intrigued about what happens with Paul because Paul
Yeah.
wakes up in the hospital and he's kind of freaked out or
Yeah.
whatever, but we only get like maybe 30 seconds of Paul.
Exactly. Exactly. Which again could have almost felt shoehorned to me, but certainly looked like a we want to do something with Paul next season. Let's remind you that he's here and sort of in shock and something's happened to him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it worked. I thought it
Yeah.
worked. I don't know if you've poked around on Reddit at all.
No, I
I
haven't.
have in light of the finale. I haven't so much throughout the season, but I was kind of surprised to see a lot of people on Reddit apparently hated this episode.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I don't know what I expected more in terms of a there need to have been some bigger, broader explanation for what's going on here, other than we've already understood for some period of time that they're switching universes
Yeah.
and they're trying to cover it up. I think that's known. I mean, so it's just to Irina, just take that and say, okay, well, my thing is going to be we're going to keep doing what we're doing, but now I'm just going to tell everyone that's happening. I could see that as a sense, but I also thought there are a lot of things tied up well.
Yeah, I think so. I really don't know. I enjoyed it a lot. So I don't know if people are disappointed that they weren't getting more explanation, more
Yeah.
resolution, wanted more closure. Don't believe that there's going to be a season two or what, but I mean, it's entirely clear to me just from the episode itself that they want a season two.
Yeah,
Beyond
that's
that, I've
key.
read Peter Harness saying so in interviews,
Yes, so both
but
things are true. They have said they want it. They clearly are establishing it. You know, some wide open doors for them to walk through if they get a second season.
yeah, and taking it from that point of view. There are things that they've really have resolved here, primarily around Joe's relationship with her family. And there are the broader mystery remains open, and there are various ways in which we could go moving forward. And I hope they get more seasons.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about one of the big ones along those lines, I guess, which is Joe's pregnancy.
Yes. So I have the little bit that I've seen in terms of commentary or questions about it is sort of that this is important because she is from the other world. She presumably got pregnant in this her current world. So what does that do in terms of what? How does that manifest through the baby? And clearly, they see, and you pointed this out on the ultrasound, an image that looks very much like the cow image when matter separates into different places.
Yeah, so what is the metaphysical status of this child, which they're
Right.
planning to have as we come out of the end of
One's
season
going to
one?
be birthed and appear in the other universe, and one's going to appear here. I mean, they could go all sorts of different directions.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know what they might do with this, but
Yeah.
Alice's question is kind of to the point. which reality is this baby from? Which does hang on Magnus being the biological father, which I think is the case. I hit on this in my recap a little bit. The timing is very tight. They say 4 weeks in terms of when she returned from space and
Yes,
didn't seem to
yeah.
be, but I think indication. I don't think they're going to Maury Povich it. I don't think that's where it's going. I think it's more of a what's going on with this child whose mother is from one reality and her father's
Yeah.
from another reality.
And that's, I think that's part of the big intrigue of what could be a second season. The mysteries, the questions would not be the same as we saw in season one. There are a lot more paths we can go down with these types of things. So yeah, you can count me on the side of certainly do hope they get a second season.
I definitely do. As many seasons as they want, I
Yeah.
guess. I guess this took a while to write, Peter Harness is also saying, but he has ideas. And in the interviews I read, it seems like he also has an idea for what the ultimate kind of ending point would be. So that's cool. I do think that in further seasons, the show might get wilder.
Yeah, certainly.
I'm on board for that, but what they've left open. A lot of the things I've left open are in the direction of, well, it'd get really weird.
Yeah, that's right. With a baby, with a zombie, yeah.
Exactly. But I think that about does it. Anything else you want to hit on before we wrap up
Yeah,
here?
that's I think pretty much the gist of the content of this episode. Very, very glad we went through this. This is a good show to talk through and try to decipher.
Yeah, I agree. I've enjoyed it. Really a lot going on this, and enough for me to write on it and talk to you about it, and still kind of always was, as we wrap up, feeling like maybe we didn't quite talk about everything because we didn't, but we don't need to hit on every little thing that
Right,
Bud
right.
destroys the cow, by the way, right? We didn't talk
Yeah,
about that.
that's right.
So yeah, this has been great. Hopefully they get a season two. Hopefully we get an announcement of a season two in the relatively near future. We'll be sure to mention that on the pod if and when it happens. And from here, we're going to start talking about another Apple TV show, which premieres next week. We mentioned Colin Farrell earlier.
Let's
Colin
do another
Farrell.
Colin Farrell show. We're going to do a show called Sugar, starring Colin Farrell as a private investigator that apparently takes some very interesting and wild turns. I want you to clock the first Apple device we see. We're going to talk about it next week.
He's gonna have like an Apple Watch or something.
Yeah, right. He's going to solve these mysteries with an Apple Vision. I think that's what he's going
He's got an Apple Vision Pro. I don't have
to
Apple
have.
Vision too. We kid. We kid Apple.
We love Apple.
Good fun. Yeah, so we'll be next week talking about the premiere of Sugar. We have two episodes coming out on April 5th. So we'll try to be on top of that in a fairly immediate way. Hopefully it's good. Hopefully we enjoy it. Hopefully you enjoy it. Hopefully you'll tune in and listen to what we have to say about it. In the meantime, follow TV Obsessive on social media. If you've liked what you've heard here in the podcast, do please leave us a good rating and review, that sort of thing, on YouTube. Like, subscribe, all that good stuff. It's much appreciated to help keep us going here. And we'll see you next week.
All right, looking forward to it. See you next time.